Cue Henry Mancini, please. It's Sunday night, but that means from high above beautiful Lake Osceola in downtown Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Good evening, this is John McMullen, John Mack to some. Welcome you to the 248th episode of Weekly John Mack Radio Show. The recordings for the previous 247 shows may be found at www.johnmack13.com. under the radio show tab. And John Mack is J-O-H-N-M-A-C. So that's www.johnmack13.com. In addition to the previous radio show, you'll also find links to my online daily newsletter at my web home. The newsletter is a curation of 10 news articles from around the country and the world. Try it and subscribe. Only one email per day, and it's free. www.johnmack13.com. Some announcements. The writers and poets in the Upper Westchester Putnam area may wish to participate in some of the terrific writing groups in the area. The Mayapak Writers Group, now in the 21st year under the coordination of Vinnie D'Aquino, meets every Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. in the Mayapak Library on 6th in Mayapak, New York. There are also two poetry workshops in the area. The first meeting is on the second Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m. at the Mayapak the Library, and the second on the fourth Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. at the John C. Hart Library in Sherbrooke, New York. The next Mayapak Library poetry workshop is Wednesday, October the 10th, and there'll also be a special open mics at the Mayapak the Library on Monday, October the 15th, where members of the Mayapak poetry workshop will do their readings. Then there'll be fresh refreshments and an open mic session for poets. Sign-ons for the open mic will begin at 6 p.m., with the program beginning at 6:30 p.m. People wishing more information on any of these writing events may contact me at johnmack13@gmail.com. I hope you'll join us the next week when my guest will be poet Linda Simone, and every week after in this time slot. Now, to this week's show, as mentioned, the 248th in this series. My guest is Yorktown, New York Town Council person, businessman, entrepreneur, and social activist Ed Lachterman. I see Ed regularly at the Yorktown Town Poetry Board meetings, where I, as the poet laureate, read a poem or two. Further, I was privileged to be a part of this Holocaust Remembrance meeting that Ed and I chaired for the town. The listeners wishing to join Ed and me on the air may do so by calling 646-716-9756. That's 646-716-9756. I generally hold caller participation until near the end of my conversation with my guest. Some who dialed in last week or who called me later to find out what happened, though, we actually began this interview the last Sunday night, but had to shut it down a little more than 10 minutes into it due to technical difficulties in the studio. Only the third time in almost 250 shows do we've had a problem. Ed has been gracious enough to return tonight, and for the sake of continuity, we will begin again as if last week had never happened. Let's get started. Welcome to the show, Ed, and thanks for making time again.
Oh, my pleasure, John. Thanks for having me. Very happy to be with you tonight.
So where did you grow up and go to early school?
I grew up in Yonkers, New York, and I went to public school down there. I was actually in three of the different public schools as a grade school kid. Started in 31, moved over by school 5 near Lockwood Avenue, and then ended up being in school 32.
Do you remember what your earliest aspirations were as a child?
Wow. You know, as a child, I always was attracted to show business, actually. My mother was a lounge singer starting at 12 years old. I had an aunt that was an acrobatic dancer in vaudeville, another couple of aunts who were singers, and even my grandmother was in on the act with she was a booking agent for a club down in the city. So she used to book all of their bands. You know, but at that time, no names like Neil Sedaka as one of the people that she had booked. But she would, come across these guys who were trying to make it big and help them out a little bit.
You started your business career young as a paperboy. I'm not even sure that job still exists. Tell us about it.
Well, you know what? At 12 years old, I remember going to the store with my mom, and I wanted to pick something up and buy it. And I said, "Mom, can I buy this?" And she said, "Yeah, sure." And I picked it up, and we got to the counter. I put it down, and it got rung up. And the woman said, "Okay, that's, you know, whatever the price was, maybe $20. And I turned to my mother, and she said, "Well, don't look at me." I said, "Well, I don't have any money." She said, "Well, I guess you better get a job." You know, my mom was teaching me a lesson. She was raising three boys alone and doing a great job with me. I can't really brag about the other two, but my mom did a fantastic job, and it was a lesson she imparted on me. So I went out, and actually I started with a penny saver route at 12, and then I think at 13 we upgraded to the Herald Statesman with the Gannett papers, and I did that for 2 years basically, and then started working in a hair salon cleaning up, and then moved into the restaurant industry at 16 years old, where I've pretty much stayed my entire life.
You're also in theatrical productions at a young age and met a mutual friend. Tell us about that.
Well, growing up in a single-family household, being raised by my mom, she felt that it was important for my brother. My middle brother, Greg, my oldest brother, Michael, was a little older at the time and getting ready for college. But my mom felt it was important for Greg and I to have some type of male mentorship, so we were both in the Big Brothers, Big Sisters organization as little brothers, which was a fantastic, fantastic thing. And, you know, as a young man growing up, it really, really helped to have someone that I could relate to and talk to on a man's point of view. So we did that. And while I was a big brother, our mutual friend, Vinny DiCino, decided to write a play for the Big Brothers to help support them. And back at the ripe old age of, I want to say, 8 or 9, I landed a role in the show.
He told me you were the star of the show. He said you were 9 years old, and wherever you did the show, people loved you.
Well, he has fond memories of me, but I was a star, although there were only, I believe, 3 or 4 different roles. So it was, by default. And I really enjoyed doing it. And I think in anything in life, when you enjoy it, that comes through. And especially in the arts, people feel that, and they feel that joy, and it translates into something for them as well.
By the way, either the Friday or the Saturday before Halloween, every year Vinny hosts an open mic at the Freight House where people read supposedly Halloween-related or scary-related things, and they have various Halloween prompts and everything. So you're certainly welcome to just pop in at that.
Oh, very interesting. When you see me at the town board meetings, please let me know, because I know that Saturday I have something going on, but I'm not sure about the Friday. So we could see which day it is.
How about your high school years? Where'd you go?
I went to Roosevelt High School in Yonkers. Started in 1980, finished, graduated in 83. Great school. Not Roosevelt anymore, from what I understand. I think they broke it up into 3 different schools now. But I loved the education that I got there. We had some fantastic teachers, and you know what? It really really set the pace for me as a young adult. In fact, when I was first going through high school, I was very good with numbers and thought about becoming an accountant. But one of my earlier jobs, I said at 16, I started working in the restaurant industry, and I had gotten a job at Charlie Brown's in Yonkers as a busboy at first, but worked my way up to a host. And when I was working one day, my senior advisor had come in, Mr. Bosshart, and we were talking afterwards, and he said, I thought you were going to school for accounting. And I said, yes, that's my plan. He said, well, I was watching you in the restaurant, and he said, wow, you really, you know, thrive in that environment. And I sat back, and I thought about it, and it was actually one of those moments that I feel define a person, where I realized that happiness and enjoying your job is one of the more important aspects. The restaurants have been very, very good to me financially over the years, but I think accountants probably make more money than a restaurant manager or area director. But honestly, to me, it was about the enjoyment, and I realized at that time, which was fairly early, it's 16 and a half, or maybe going on 17, that, you know what, it's not always about the dollar, but doing something that you're passionate about.
Now, about that time, there were 2 Charlie Browns on Central Avenue. There was the one down right when it goes under the thruway, and there was one up on the other side of the street, say more to the middle of town. Which one were you in?
Well, actually, your recollection is right about a restaurant being there by the thruway, but that was actually the Ground Round. That wasn't Charlie Brown's. Charlie Brown's was over by, well, I date myself, if anyone from the show is listening, Charlie Brown's was pretty much across the street from Patricia Murphy's. And that's dating.
I believe it was a Charlie Brown's before the Ground Round, and it was only when Charlie Brown's got in some whatever happened to him. It became the Grand Round, then it became something else, and now, unfortunately, it's an empty building. I first knew that when it was more of a catering fancy place called Tropical Acres, because a friend of mine's had his wedding reception there. But I was pretty sure it was Charlie before the Grand Round.
No, actually, it was Grand Round first, and it never really that location was never Charlie Brown's. Charlie Brown's opened up in 1981 on Central Avenue. It was their first one. They had one in Scarsdale. They had one in Mamaroneck. They had one in Greenwich back in that era. And then later on, when they had a couple of rebirths through different companies buying them out, they had opened one actually right here in Mohegan Lake.
Oh, really? Where?
Now it's the now it's where the IHOP is.
Oh, I ate there a number of times. Sure, absolutely.
Actually, my daughter worked there for a little bit. That's when you feel old, when your daughter works at the place you used to work at.
Is the chain still in business?
I'm sorry?
Is the chain still in business, or did the whole chain go out?
No, the chain is still in business. I guess a while back they had a restructure, and part of the restructuring was taking some of the businesses that didn't make sense economically due to profits, sales, whatever the case may be, and turning those over and just concentrating on their higher volume and higher profitable restaurants. At that point, they did that, and it helped keep them alive. They may not have made it if it wasn't for making that change. So sometimes you have to reinvent yourself. There's one in Hopewell Junction, or actually it's Fishkill, right on 9A off of 84. And if you go in there, say hello to the manager, Angelo. Angelo used to manage the Yonkers restaurant years back with me. Great guy, knows the restaurant business and keeps that restaurant in tip-top condition. Really good guy.
Then after high school, you said you went to college. Where'd you go? Where'd you major in once you gave up accounting?
Well, I went to State University of New York in Cobleskill, which is basically 49 miles from Oneonta and 49 miles from Albany, with not a heck of a lot in between. I majored in hospitality management with a focus on hotels.
And what happened after college then?
After college, I ended up going back actually into the restaurant world. I did try the hotels for a little bit through the I worked for Marriott in one of their restaurants, but I really had more of that passion for the restaurants and ended up just focusing there. So I worked with Charlie Brown's. I became their youngest general manager ever, and then fortunately for them, I saw them changing their way of doing business. They were owned by Restaurant Associates at the time, and Restaurant Associates started to get more into account management, so to speak. So they'd open up a dining room at Lehman Marcus or Lehman Brothers, I'm sorry, or Neiman Marcus, or they did a lot. They had a couple of places down in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and they were able to, at that point, focus on a place that would be set up for them. They would come in and get paid to operate it. And in the restaurant industry, a lot of people don't really think about it, but the restaurant industry, if you're lucky, you're making nickels and dimes out of the sales. So it's very hard to be profitable there. And with Restaurant Associates, it didn't make sense for them to stay in restaurants where it was a crapshoot if you make a profit, when you could go into account management and fee-paid accounts where you're making your money right off the top. So they decided to do that, and I knew they wouldn't be opening restaurants, so I moved on to a company called Apple Metro, who owned the Applebee's franchise for the area. And I worked with Apple Metro for 13 years.
I know that a number of those restaurant associate types have gone into to managing colleges and things for people like IBM and others. And I knew the one that that managed the Marist College cafeteria and dining room and everything. And sure. It's interesting because I ran into someone the other day who works the health clubs, and he told me that some of the health clubs have gone into providing specialized health clubs for corporations now rather than just showing up on Route 6 and opening a health club. So maybe it's a trend to bring your expertise to some other organization than trying to just make on your own. I don't know.
Absolutely. It makes sense all around from a – you know, when you own a big company and your people want to stay healthy and you want them to be healthy, you know, how great is it to be able to have a health club facility right there? And it's the same with restaurants or going out to eat. Let's provide something for them. It keeps them happier, more productive. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, they won't get drunk at lunch either.
But a lot of people don't remember, though, restaurant associates started all in, like, the high-end restaurants in the city, like the Brasseria, the Sea Grill,
right.
The American Festival Cafe. Matter of fact, they still may even run the stuff in Rockefeller Center, but they had all those restaurants along the ice rink, and in the summertime in the ice rink, they turned that into a big garden cafe. So... great history they had. Yeah. Nick Valente was their president who really drove that.
And what happened 28 years ago last Sunday when you were supposed to be on the show?
Actually, last Saturday. It was the day before. Sunday. It was the 28th anniversary of my first date with my wife. Who just reminded me that another property that Restaurant Associates owned was Mama Leone's, and that's where we got married. So that was 26.
I went to school with a fellow named Frank Leone, whose mother owned a Mama Leone's. He was a good deal older than me. He went to school up in Rhinebeck, New York, with me. And mm-hmm. I met him years later, and he was working in a Needix on 181st Street. And according to him, his family wanted him to learn the retail business, which really wasn't the story. They told him, go do something else. You know,
they ended up selling it off when they moved the location into the Milford Plaza.
Oh, okay. I know you got married in 1992. Did you move to Yorktown then?
Shortly after. When we married, we were here. Pretty much. We were living with my mother-in-law, a wonderful woman, Rose McTeig. She's actually my hands-down favorite mother-in-law of all times. Of course, I've only been married once, but if I was married twice, I guarantee you should be in the top three.
take us through your work experience and the formation of your own businesses.
With Charlie Brown's, I worked with them for 11 or 12 years, working my way up from a busboy to a general manager. When I left them, I wanted to learn how to open restaurants, so I went with the young and upcoming Applebee's at the time and opened quite a few restaurants with Apple Metro, learned quite a bit from the owners, Roy and Zane, two really dynamic individuals. Worked for them throughout Westchester, did a couple of special projects for them, and including opening up an Italian concept for them that they, you know, after I went back to the Applebee's side, unfortunately, they ended up doing away with. But it was a phenomenal experience. I worked with Apple Metro for 13 years. And most recently, I was a director of food service for a school for at-risk children. And have been doing that, but was recently injured there. So right now I'm focusing on some personal things that I have. One of the things I started with my experience in the hospitality industry years back and have done quite a few things with, but never really, it's more of a hobby, never really a lifestyle, was a hospitality consulting business called the Ultimate Service Agency. So with that, I basically can help anyone, but I focus on restaurants in learning how to address the hospitality issues that will affect your guests. But I have done some training with not only with restaurants, but retail, and even, you know, something a lot of people don't think about, truck delivery drivers into businesses, because a lot of times I don't even see my salesman for a company. I deal with my drivers. So how horrible is that when you could lose your business from an account because your driver doesn't know how to talk to someone? So I did that for, I've been doing that on and off since its inception in 91, but lately I've done a few big projects that I've really enjoyed. And just recently in February, my lovely wife, Carol, and myself bought a massage studio down in White Plains called Elements. It's a national franchise, but the units are all individually owned. And we have been working with that since February, although, you know, we have a very capable manager down there. We are able to keep focused with our other endeavors, and eventually, though, I'm sure we'll move more towards that as a family business.
Now, how do you build that kind of business? You purchase it, say, that I already had some clientele. How do you get more people for the massage business? Do you work with physical trainers? Do you advertise?
I can't give you all my secrets because then all the other massage places might try to jump onto them. But you know what? Honestly, I do a lot of marketing, social media marketing, as well as just, you know, internet marketing. We offer a really great introductory rate of $40 off our normal massage. And then we have a membership, which, you know, we're kind of slow like that. We don't charge you anything to join the membership. We just give you that great price every massage that you get. And we just ask you to commit to one massage a month, which we take out, have the client pay for that at the beginning of the month. They could use it whenever they want during the month. If they can't use it during the month, it rolls over. So in reality, we've put together a great program that helps perpetuate that. So we have, I think, approximately 450 members, which I'll get my update at the end of the night tonight as the month is ending. But, you know, we do a lot of advertising. Then we will do a lot of charity events, too. So the National Association for Mental Health did their walk-a-thon down at Ryde Playland. Actually, it was one of the beaches near Ryde Playland. And we went down with one of our therapists, and we did free chair massages for the walkers. We're very active in a lot of charities up in Yorktown. And anytime someone's doing something, we've been donating a massage for those events. I don't know if that helps us, but I'm hoping it helps them in raising funds. We've been doing the chair events. We just did a health fair down in White Plains. We do some partnerships with some chiropractors and physical therapists, which definitely help. So all of the above really there, but the best thing that we do is we have some great massage therapists, and they keep bringing the people back. They do a great massage, and people want to come in.
Now, the only place in the immediate area here that had a massage name turned out, I believe, to be the front for something else going on there. Is there the market for quality massage in the Yorktown area?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, there's a place right down near where the hardware store. Carol, help me out.
Mitchell,
thank you. Mitchell Hardware used to be. There's a place there. They do foot reflexology, and they right next door to Starbucks. They do body work there. See, and actually Angel Face Spa has massage as well. The problem with that, Angel Face does have therapists, but they're a spa, and I think their price is somewhere around 50% higher than what we charge. They also do other things there, and I looked at a concept like that when I was looking into this franchise, and I thought it was a little too confusing for what I wanted to be. Carol and I spoke a lot about massage, not facials, not spa treatments, not all of the other things. We believe in massage. We believe in essential oils, healthy living, chiropractic care as a way of avoiding some of these medicines. And I just didn't think that the message that we wanted to bring forward was that whole spa thing. But the massage is definitely viable. There's a huge market. As a matter of fact, in New York, the market is bigger than the amount of therapists out there. Because in New York, they're a little stricter than our surrounding tri-state area, where Connecticut and New Jersey require 500 hours of education. In New York, you're required to have 1,000 hours of education, as well as passing your state-certified board test. A place that does body work, that's because their people have not gone to school for it. And that's what a lot of these places are, that was nefarious for doing other things, as you said before. There are a few places like the one by Starbucks that, you know what, they're legitimate and they do a really nice job, and they just don't have the education that New York requires for them to do massage. When you have a problem that you want taken care of, that's a massage therapist. I don't know about you, but with my last injury, my cervical spine has more herniated and bulging discs than not. Matter of fact, out of the six discs in between the seven vertebrae, I have three herniations and two bulging discs. So I need help and massage.
Well, I have real basketball ankles and hips and everything. And my orthopedist had recommended this terrific chiropractor over on Route 202 who I was going to. I was extremely happy with. And it seems to me, as I look around, that there are more and more people who are concerned with their health, getting healthy, staying healthy. There's more and more health clubs all around. There's more and more urgent cares, which there weren't any 10 years ago. Now they're all over the place. It just seems that there's much more focus in physical well-being than there ever was when I was younger. I don't know.
Well, we're living longer, but we're battling other things. And you know what? People want to take advantage of that opportunity. You know, when my dad passed in his early 50s, I am that age right now. And, you know, I want to make it a little past that. So it's, eat better. I haven't had an ibuprofen or an Aleve since March of last year. I take prescribed medicine that I have to take, and that's it. I'm not, I don't want to be with pain pills and things like that that mask and don't really help you. And I want to take advantage. So I understand where you're coming from. And which chiropractor did you use, by the way?
His name just went right out of my head. Dave Mecca. Dave McDine. Dave something. I'll tell you at the board meeting.
Okay. I used to use Floyd Miller down by Crompon Chiropractic. He was very good. Still is.
Okay. I believe that he's in partnership with this fellow, and for a while he had, I believe,
Dave McGuire.
And he left for a while, then they came back?
I know Floyd's wife did pass from cancer, yes, tragically, very
yes.
young.
Yeah, he's in both partnership with this fellow, and he trained this fellow. And,
Dave
McGuire. Yeah, my orthopedist, Steve Small, had recommended them.
Yeah, they're very good. And actually, they have an acupuncturist there, Dr. Roy. I call him Dr. Roy. I think it's Amoruso is his last name. And ironically,
yes.
Floyd's daughter is a massage therapist. So even he sees the benefits of that.
You've also become active in a number of community service groups, such as the Lions. So let's start with the Lions. What is the purpose of the Lions? What do they do in Yorktown?
Well, the Lions' initial mission was actually to help combat blindness and help people with sight impairments, and we still do a lot of that. We actually go around to schools and do eye screening I think they pick up, I forget the medical name, but lazy eye, and it's also helped in a couple of cases finding neoblastomas. And
it's called amblyopic eyes. I have an amblyopic right eye that means I don't use it, other than I had very good peripheral vision playing basketball, but I don't use it. So
okay. So well, there you go. And we do those eye testings young in nursery schools and kindergarten, so we could actually help catch it young and address it and get it taken care of. But our Lions Club in Yorktown a few years ago started to morph a little bit into a very local community service-oriented group. While I was on the board and then served 2 years as president, I had some great people behind me with a common vision that said, hey, you know what? It's great helping out on these international projects and these vision projects, which we still do. We do a lot of typhoon support, earthquake support in Nepal. We've done local earthquake support. Our Leo's group went to Staten Island during Hurricane Sandy and helped out there. We do a lot of great things that way, but our group sort of said, hey, there are a lot of different charities, which I must say, Yorktown is almost like a hub of great service organizations / charities. And we sat down and sort of rewrote our mission statement to what's important to us. So we find ourselves doing a lot of veteran services, a lot of senior services. We donate to 4 different food banks. We have now, I believe, 5 different scholarships. We do holiday visits into some of the schools for the children, like at Pines Bridge School and at Westchester Exceptional Children's School, where they have the children with autism. So we've really focused on a lot of our localities. And then we do a lot of great events. So we have coming up actually on that Saturday before Halloween, we have the Yorktown Lions Halloween parade in conjunction with the town of Yorktown. We do the Easter egg hunt around Easter, of course. And I didn't see you take advantage of any of our concerts at our summer concert series this year, but we do that every year as well. And that's actually one of our big give backs to the community, not only to build community spirit, but thanking the community for all the support for everything else that we do.
One of your main singers in a concert series used to work for us when she was in school. She's the daughter of the Sarkisian family that owned the rug business in Yorktown.
Andrea.
You're right. She's a terrific young lady.
Yes, she is. Her band was our opening act for our Best of Yorktown this year. Andrea and the Armenian Rug Riders. And
right.
A matter of fact.
Right. That's a family business.
Yes, I did not realize that, but it makes sense. And ironically, her drummer, Brett Roberts, is one of our Lions' sons. And and his son has been battling a couple of different issues, and the Lions have adopted him as a cub. So, you know, another thing we do is there have been some youth that have been fighting different cancers, and we've supported them as well.
Let's stay with the food bank for a moment. Barbara McMillan and I are active in the community food pantry, which operates out of St. Mary's Episcopal Church on 6 of Mohegan Lake. It's non-sectarian. Their community hall there also has AA meetings and has a Jewish a mental health organization operating out of it. And it's amazing, how many people have need of the service, and B, I'd point out that a mutual friend of ours, Mike Grace, I used to be supportive of. He used to show up there periodically, so I'd love to have you show up some Saturday morning and just see what happens there.
I actually have done quite a bit of work with Mother Claire before she left.
She was a terrific person, wasn't she?
Absolutely. But both helping with the fundraising aspect. She would always hit me up for the raffle tickets, the big raffle tickets, but I would also donate prizes for anything they did. And one of the groups that I do a lot of work with, United for the Troops, they take food donations to send overseas to active military. And
right.
When they get a lot of stuff that they can't use because maybe it's in a glass jar, too big, but, you know, some different things they can't. So my wife Cal and I, along with bringing other stuff there on our own, usually after the big pack up on Thanksgiving weekend, deliver all that stuff over to St. Mary's for that. Anything they can't send, they donate to St. Mary's. Wonderful church for the community. Highly respect what they've done, and like you said, it's not. And a lot of the churches, I know St. Pat's has different groups. Our religious community here in Yorktown is outstanding, and they're supportive of different groups. Like I think you mentioned AA and the Mental Health Association. So it's Yorktown is an amazing community. It really is.
The biggest individual contributors to the community food pantry there are parishioners of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, the Roman Catholic Church in the area. So it's so all of the churches do work together with it. And while Mother Claire was hitting you up for raffle tickets, I was hitting up Mike. So.
Actually, Mike hit me up to split his too 1 year.
You were also a member of Yorktown Against Heroin. What made you get involved with this group?
You know, opioid addiction is just, it's a plague on our society right now. I've seen so many families fall victim to not only opioid addiction, but drugs, alcohol, even, you know, depression, which doesn't help in the drug addiction war. So, I think it's more, I know what problems arise from this. I'm very educated to what's happening. I have a lot of friends that are very in tune with it because of family members as well. And being involved in our local politics, our local public service, I cannot think of any one of our elected officials who are not involved in trying to end this scourge. And when you look at the work of Terrence Murphy, who's a pretty close friend, and the opioid task force that he started in the town, or actually in the state, Councilman Diana, Judge Lagonia, Judge Raniolo, Councilman Diana's former law enforcement, and the judges were trying to start a drug court in Yorktown. And they do a lot of work with the youth, trying to get them on the straight and narrow. So it was just a great platform to help push that and extend that. So when I was asked to join, I really thought it was a very important group to be a part of.
You're also in the Sons of the American Legion. I know of the American Legion, but what is the Sons of the American Legion?
Well, the Sons have been around for a little while, but we only just started our group this past January in Yorktown. It's January or February, Cal? Might have been February. I'm thinking January. But the Sons of the American Legion are open to any person whose father or grandfather served in the military. So my father served in the Army during the Korean War. Wow, I'm making him real old. But my father served during Korea. He did not serve overseas. He served here. And I wanted to do something to not only memorialize him, but to help the veterans in need of help, and also to try to do some service to my country. So I ended up joining up and being on the board, which I figured would just be for the first year, but since we only started half year, it moved on to the second year, and we'll see how that goes through that. But I'm one of the officers in it, and serve with a great bunch of guys, and we do a lot of the work that you would find the American Legion doing. We do it in conjunction. Matter of fact, I think it was on the second Sunday of the month, starting in October. I'll let you know for sure so you could let your listeners know. We're going to start doing like a Sunday breakfast to raise money, or brunch to raise money for different veteran services. We actually have five groups picked out that we will support. The Hudson Valley Honor Flight, Purple Heart, my brother Vinny, United for the Troops, and the VA Food Pantry. So we'll be doing a breakfast to raise money for those groups.
You've also been active volunteering in some other civic groups. Let's take them one by one, and if you give us a short explanation of each. My brother Vinny.
My brother Vinny is an organization that their motto is doing one good deed at a time. They focus on our challenged population, but they also have started a focus on helping veterans who are looking for. A veteran gets an apartment, they don't have anything to furnish it with. The VA gives them a voucher for that apartment. Paula started, my brother Vinny, in honor of her brother who passed away. And what they do now, they have set up a system where they help these veterans not only with their apartments, getting them furnished, but they get them sheets, towels, kitchenware. It's unbelievable. It's 100% volunteer, and she to date has helped, I want to say, 670 veterans in about 4.5 years.
Wow. United for the Troops.
United for the Troops, sending a little bit of home overseas. Once again, 100% volunteer organization. They send, a few times a year, they send care packages to active military overseas. The only thing that they really end up paying for is postage, because they try to make sure these packages go to people who don't normally get packages. And, you know, they might send 12 of them to a chaplain who has a list of kids who never get anything from home. And there are some kids who are local that get, you know, because their family may not have to send to them. But we really try to get that, get a little bit of home and have them open up that package. And it's amazing if you go on their website to see some of the videos that they send. And the best thing that's in there is people, not just kids, but people of all ages do cards. And we put a bunch of cards in each box. That's what the troops look forward to. And my hat's off to Jim Ratchmitt, his wife Patty, and actually their son Luke, who was in the 82nd Airborne, who's the one who said, "Dad, stop sending me packages. Send them to these people." I believe they're in 11 years, somewhere around 15,000 packages sent. And this was going to be a one-year kick where they did 200 the first year, and they were thrilled about it. Now it's an unbelievable thing. And once again, 100% volunteer. The only thing they end up paying for is a postage, and that's only because it goes to actual people. And if they just wanted to put it in the military system, they could do it for free, but there's no guarantee where it goes. And that's important to make sure it gets into the active areas.
Yorktown Teen Center.
You know what? What a great organization for our teens. Yorktown Teen Center is in the Albert Capellini Community Cultural Center. They have activities for the kids. One of the couples that founded it, Perry and Sam Matza, wonderful people. Sam actually was my speaker at my first Holocaust Remembrance event, telling his story. He's a Holocaust survivor. But they wanted to do something for the teens in Yorktown. They offer activities, including, crafts, basketball, different gym games. I think they have a pool table up in one of their rooms. They have computers. The Lions this year just donated library shelving for them, and they're doing some books, and we gave them some money to get started with that. So any old books you have that you want to donate, they'd be glad to take. But they're giving our kids options, which, you know, we need mentorship for our kids. We need options for things for them to do, and that is the mission of the Teen Center.
Yeah, we know Perry. She's a very nice woman, and we see it every year. She volunteers in the on election days and
yep.
primary days.
Yep, she's always there for elections.
Speaking of that, what made you decide to run for public office?
Stupidity? No. My wife is shaking her head yes. No, you know what, John? I I get passionate about things, and I used to have a saying in the restaurant business as a manager and an area director. One of my managers came to me that I was working with, and they were like, "Oh, there's a problem with this." I said, "That's great. The busboys recognize the problems. The leaders fix them." One day I was moaning about some of the problems that I saw in town, and I want to blame it on my wife. Said to me, "Didn't you always say that if you see a problem, you need to fix it as a leader?" Well, it's like shut up or put up type of thing. So I decided it was something that I would try to help my town, and when I saw something, try to fix it. So just civic duty, I guess you could call it at that point.
You won your first election in a squeaker. Tell us about that one.
Well, I earned the nickname from some of my friends, Landslide Lachterman. In the first election, so I ran as a councilman, as I serve now. And in Yorktown, the seats go to the top two vote getters. You do not run against an individual person. You run against the entire field. So you finish first, second, or go home. So the year I ran, Councilman Diana actually pulled the top votes, and myself and now Supervisor Gilbert were neck and neck. On election day, I went to bed thinking I was down a couple of votes, and I got a phone call from my brother-in-law at 6 in the morning the next day from Maryland saying, "Oh, my God, I can't believe you're up by 2 votes." He was actually in a tree stand because he's a hunter, and he called me to let me know he'd seen that, and I didn't even realize it. And then I ended up winning by a whopping 7 votes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was so moved by the Holocaust program that you put together, and the fact that we not only have survivors still alive in the town, like Samuel you mentioned, but the fact that our present town supervisor, Alani Gilbert, and our most recent past supervisor, Mike Grace, both had direct connections to that awful history. Please tell us how the program got started and to whether you originally knew of Lonnie and Mike's history.
Well, when I started, I definitely knew of Mike's history because it was actually something that Michael Grace helped support me in and push me. As a young councilman, as I said, as a new councilman, because I don't think I qualified as young, I said I wanted to do something to bring awareness to the Holocaust and make sure that we don't forget. I'm a big fan of the saying, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." I understand that, and I definitely do not want to see anything like this. And Michael had shared his story. I have relatives that fortunately had gotten out in time, but like my grandmother's village in Poland doesn't exist anymore. It was totally wiped out during the Holocaust. So we were talking about it, and he let me know about that. And then when everything started to go, Alan told me about his father, who was a liberator in World War II, part of the forces liberating the camps. And I actually invited him to light a candle in honor of his father and the other liberators who freed the people from the concentration camps at that first and then the second Holocaust event.
It was also, from his story, was also almost something that we wouldn't have thought of, that the American Army reacted so strongly to that they began their own whatever you want to call it, killing the guards that perpetrated this, which we've never heard before, obviously.
I don't know if it was the guards, but it they definitely executed some of the higher ups that they still found with the camps. I had known it because it's been only because it's been memorialized in some shows and movies. I think in Band of Brothers they had that in one of the episodes, and there have been a few movies that have also focused on that. But I had an overwhelming experience this year for Father's Day while I was visiting my daughter in Germany, and we went to Dachau prison camp as my Father's Day gift. Sounds odd, but it was a bucket list for me, wanting to have this experience, and it was profound. It brought me to tears.
The story that the survivor told at the this year about his sisters and his mother being killed, and the only reason that he and his brother weren't, they were twins, and that the famous Dr. Mengele wanted to experiment on twins. It was so horrifying that I don't know if there was the dry eye in the audience, and to listen to him just tell the story as though he still remembered it like 70 years later, it was just unbelievable.
He does. I actually, after going to Dachau, I sat down with him and his wife again, and we had a very nice conversation. His father actually survived Dachau prison camp as well. And Peter and I, were able to sit down. And Anne is also, his wife is a survivor as well. Like Perry, she was hidden from the Nazis. Not Perry. Like Sam Matza, she was hidden from the Nazis. But it's just you see it and it's such an effect hearing it, and that's one of the main reasons that I wanted to bring that to Yorktown. I felt that there was nothing that can talk about the evils that exist like that, that we need to avoid, that we need to push away from, than hearing that story and hearing what someone had to go through.
It's so hard to understand. I remember reading the column years ago by Pete Hamill during the protesters against the Vietnam War, and there were protesters who were calling the cops pigs and everything. And he said, in the column, he said, I agree with to what they're trying to do, but as soon as you begin to call a group of people by a name like a pig or a kike or a gook, you dehumanize them. And once you dehumanize them, you can do things to them that you would never do to a human being. And it's the first time I ever thought about anything like that. And it's one of the reasons that we have to stay away from these racist terms or these bigoted terms, because they're right. He was absolutely right.
It's a problem that I have with our current governor when he called the ICE officers thugs, and that's exactly what I said. And I never read Pete Hamill's article about that, but my exact words were, it makes them targets because people don't think of them as police officers now. It dehumanizes them. They're just a bunch of thugs. And it's tragic because whether you agree or not with the fact that they have a job to do, that job was created by the United States government is a law enforcement and it's to protect our borders. And there's border protection is important. Look at any other country in the world. They all protect
even more than that though. Some of them may be rotten people, and some may be nice people. My father was a cop, and I knew some great cops, and I knew some rotten people. But they're all individual human beings, and we have to judge human beings as human beings, not as members of some group.
Once you want to lump everyone together, There's definitely an issue. And it's one of the sad realities of our world that still happens. But it's funny because another comment that was made was America was never really great. I think the one thing that does make us great is the fact that as a country, we have been pushing through these issues. We have been making progress. We have been solving them and trying to make things better. You know, my godson is African. My goddaughter is Russian. I grew up in a time, you know, I grew up in the 70s. There was a lot of prejudice. I was a Jewish family in an Italian neighborhood. You used the word kike before. That was an everyday name for me. You know what? There were a lot of worse things said too. But we need to look past that. And I look at my daughter. I look at my godson. I look at our relationships now. And in the 70s, I don't know. I don't know if that would have been. You know, even my marriage. My wife is Italian Irish. I'm a Ashkenazi Jew from Northern Europe. We live in harmony. And even my grandmother at one time, who was Polish and Russian, when I first introduced her to my wife, I was like, you know, she's not Jewish. My grandmother said, well, do you love her? I said, of course. Well, that's what's important in life. So when that message comes through and we realize that people are individuals, you love them for who they are, not their affiliation, not their religion, not the color of their skin. You know what? We'll get where we need to get.
What he meant to say, and he didn't say it well, what he should have said was that we still haven't lived up to the ideal of the country as is in the Constitution and Declaration of Independence. The one thing that we have shown is that we have devolved, as you say, past all these things. When we look at places like the former Soviet Union, where we thought that the Soviet boot came off, that all these people that'd be out in the street, that'd be Democrats, they started shooting each other right away, the Muslims, the Croats, and the Serbs. And we didn't learn any better because in Iraq, we thought they were going to be all welcoming us. And as soon as the boot came off from Saddam, the Sunnis and the Shiites started killing each other. These people never forgot their prejudices. In the United States, at least we've evolved past ours, thank God, you know. So
yeah, no, and that's part of what, you know, look, I think America's great, and I think that it's been great for 241 years. Are we a country now? If you go from the signing of the Declaration. So you won't convince me that statement should never be made, whether it's misstated or not. But
well, he could have said that
right.
We still haven't reached the ideals of the country. And he's right. There's still bigotry, and there's still this, and there's still divisiveness. But we're getting there. And we've been getting there for a long time. Yeah,
right. So. And it will take even more because you just pointed it out. There are so many. Look at Israel and the Arab world and Palestine. Look at the African warlords still. You know, that was the start of slavery. You know, that's how slavery started. One warlord said, oh, I know a good way to get rid of all of my competition. I'm going to help capture them and send them over to England. And then they'll send them over to the United States. You know what? We have always
probably hoped, though, because I never thought when I was younger that there'd be peace in Ireland or there'd be an end to apartheid in South Africa. But eventually we got there in both places. So maybe there is hope for these other places. I don't know.
there is, but it's you know what? It's going to take generations. You know what? As long as we're working towards it, that's what greatness is. You know, the even the 27 Yankees lost a couple of games, but you know,
that's
you
true.
Work at perfection. You work at trying to be perfect. It's never going to happen, but we will keep getting better, and that is what makes it great. Like you said, you take the boot off in some of these countries, and it devolves. It gets worse. That has not happened in our country, thank God.
The one thing I've heard people say in just is that when the spaceship lands and the little green guys get off, we're all brothers under the skin here.
I used to read a lot of science fiction as a kid, and that was always a central theme on bringing the world together. And you know, a lot of times life imitates art. So who knows what the next couple of centuries will bring? But that would be one quick way to have everyone together with a common foe like that.
What's next for you?
What's next for me? I'm not sure. I want to enjoy where I'm at with my wife, with my family. Unfortunately, my daughter and son-in-law are out of the country for a couple of years. You know what? I want to be a grandpa. I want to enjoy part of getting over the 50-year marker. I will keep focused on my massage studio. I will keep focused on my hospitality industry, consulting, because you know what? Elements massage is something I believe in. It's great for your health, and by keeping people employed and helping people that need it, to me it's a win-win. And then with the Ultimate Service Agency, that's a passion. You know, the hospitality consulting, I enjoy it. I really do. Then I am probably going to run for office again next year, much to my wife's disappointment. But, I feel that I have not accomplished all I'd like to accomplish for the town of Yorktown. So that's something I have to finish figuring out. And that's really about it right now.
We've covered a lot of bases tonight. What else would you like the audience to know about you?
Oh, wow. You know what? As Olivia, one of my two dogs, is trying to let me know. We are animal lovers here. My wife's trying to quiet her because I guess someone's walking by with a dog, so she wants to bark at the dog. So my wife's chasing her around. She's having fun making her go in circles. But we have two dogs, two birds, and we had a cat that we recently lost. So we're big animal lovers. I do support the SPCA down in Briarcliff, where we also adopted our two dogs from. I think that's really about it, except that, you know, it's nice to look back and say that life has been pretty good. Have I made some errors in life? Yeah, but you know what, I've been doing a lot of good and a lot of atoning, so to speak, for anything that, you know, I might have treated someone wrong as a kid. I feel that the path I've taken over my last 25, 30 years, especially with Carol, has been a really great ride.
Well, that's terrific. Ed, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
John, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. We didn't have anyone call in with any questions today?
I don't see anyone. However, there will be people that will be downloading. And as I mentioned to you, I'll send it out to you during the week, and you can send it to all sorts of people. And we don't know how many people have listened on the web. So,
right.
So we'll see.
Good. Well, thank you so much again, John. It was a pleasure, and I'll see you on Tuesday.
Yes, you will. Send any comments or questions about the show to johnmack13@gmail.com, and be sure to join us next week at the same time for my conversation with poet Linda Simone. Go to my website, www.johnmack13, for URLs for previous shows and the schedule of upcoming shows. And in the words of Mets radio announcer Howie Rose, if the Mets win, put it in the book. Until next time, as he used to say, see ya. Let's go off with the Eagles. Amazon, play Peaceful Easy Feeling.
Here's Peaceful Easy Feeling from your library on Amazon Music.
Good night again, everybody.
'Cause I got a peaceful.